countries that actually initiated the national IGF. So it's for the East African IGF, it's been quite important for us to benchmark with them and learn lessons. So thank you very much. The next speaker is Adiel Akplogan. I hope I have pronounced that right. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Afrinic, and Afrinic initiated and has supported the West African Internet Governance Forum and also the East African Internet Governance Forum. So over to you, Adiel.
Thank you, Alice. So I will just briefly talk about our experience at Afrinic supporting IGF initiative regionally. I think one thing that's come out from the various global IGF is that the African community in general need to focus more on a regional issue that are affecting the internet governance in general, which are not always well promoted at the global IGF, because at the global IGF look at the big picture of stuff, while regionally and at country level there are some specific issue. So we thought it's very important to encourage regional initiative around IGF so that people from different region and from different country can look at the internet governance, look at what are the issue in their country, in their region that preventing the internet development. So we have supported the East African IGF since the beginning, and it's a very interesting model, and we thought it will be something good to replicate elsewhere. So we have tried to facilitate and promote the same thing in West Africa. So we had a very informal one in 2008, and in 2009 we had a very formal West Africa IGF, which find come out to be very, very successful and very interesting for the participant. And we have noticed a very high interest from government because it's a forum that allows them to be in touch with the technical community, with the civil society, and try to discuss with them. So the main thing is to bring the spirit behind the global IGF back to the region, back to the country, and make government at their ease, talking in a multi-stakeholder environment, appropriating the culture of the IGF. So it was very successful, and most interesting, we said last year during the West Africa IGF meeting that Afrinic will facilitate, but our goal is not to continue to be the one organizing the IGF for the region. We want actors, local actors, to take it over. And interesting enough, this year we have an organization that fully pledged the support for the IGF event. They have funded the whole event. They are working with different stakeholders to do it. So our role now is more to share our past experience and help in coordinating, but that is the kind of thing we want, and we want to take that to the country too, where we can find actors in different country in the region to facilitate the IGF process locally, to put effort in organizing the community around the IGF, because it's a cultural thing. I think they must understand that those issues cannot be addressed only by the government or only by the technical community or only by the civil society and others. It has to be, they have to be addressed in the multi-stakeholder approach. So our goal really is to encourage the multi-stakeholder approach, when it comes to internet governance or ICT development in general. So we are really looking forward to those regional IGF, and mainly we are looking forward more implication of the different stakeholders in ICT policy, ICT development, and internet uptake in general. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adiel. Our continent, our region, is known to be the, you know, the slowest or the quietest, if I may use that word, in terms of speaking up on internet governance issues, indeed on most issues that involve global policy processes. So it's quite impressive to see how some countries and regions, especially East and West Africa, have actively played a role in the whole internet governance process, and particularly the East African one, and most important, the links, for example, with this ICANN meeting, where we see issues that were brought up during the East African IGF around capacity, for example, in understanding cybersecurity, are then brought up to the ICANN level. And ICANN was, you know, we are grateful to ICANN, was able to organize workshops around cybersecurity based on an East African IGF, so it's quite impressive. And also just the role of participation. It's also quite impressive to see how many Kenyans and Africans have attended this meeting, and some of them are providing very meaningful participation. We haven't got there yet, but the fact that the meeting is here and Kenya will be hosting the IGF is quite important for the African region. Anyway, let me hand over the next speaker, Zahid Jamil. He's from Pakistan, a member of the GNSO, as well as MAG. He's going to be telling us a little bit about the whole multi-stakeholder stakeholder engagement in the IGF, as well as looking at the IGF from a development perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, before I start, I must apologize for my tardiness. The GNSO Council meeting with wrap-up session is still going on, and so I had to leave a little bit in the middle, so I apologize for that. My perspective with regard to multi-stakeholder from a personal level, then I'll sort of share what has happened in my view on a global level, and then maybe some of the achievements we've had locally on the ground and the importance of what internet governance and multi-stakeholderism and its impact on developing countries. I think that's something I'd just like to bring out. I wouldn't be here in ICANN if it wasn't for the IGF. In fact, I think that it was because I spent some time at the IGF that I got interested in all these technical aspects, met a lot of people, I think, and then I got pulled in, and I'm still sucked into the ICANN system at the moment. And I think that just gives you an example of the ability of the IGF and Internet Governance Multi-Stakeholder Forums to discuss and engage people who otherwise would have been pretty much out of their depth. I would have been, really, if I'd come to an ICANN meeting. And so I think it was an interesting way. And I know most people go from ICANN to the IGF, but I had a completely different experience, and I think that helps with developing countries and people who are learning. I think it also provides a very different platform and an engagement, which is unavailable in certain other forums, where businesses, for instance, would have to get accreditation from their local government, regulators, etc. And this open platform allows you not to necessarily do that and come here and participate in your voice to be added to the discussion, debate, and engagement. So I think that has been very useful. The learning that that leads to, I think, a difference in developing countries, at least in the way that they engage their businesses, civil societies, and governments. A person from my country standing up and questioning someone from another government, or even my own government, is something that I think is unique. There are certain formalities. And I think this unique forum in the IGF allows that sort of much more relaxed discussion to take place. And it also allows certain government individuals, for instance, or businesses otherwise, to have an open discussion where they say, well, I'm maybe speaking on my own behalf. I think that engagement and basically not having to negotiate things out, the discussion-making or discussion forum that the IGF is, has a huge impact on enabling people in developing countries to ask questions and to engage. Now, I want to give you some simple examples of what the impact of the IGF in Pakistan on sort of development. Over the past few years, a couple of years at least, I've shared in the consultation some of the impact it has had in Pakistan, but some important ones. I'm sitting next to Nominet. If I hadn't been to the IGF, wouldn't have met them. That wouldn't have left to the dispute resolution body that we have, which is now successfully cleaning up, or as somebody else characterized something else the other day, sheriff the environment, the .pk, and led to a much cleaner from cyber squatting TLD. I think that's a huge governance issue, and I think it's a development aspect where technology was transferred from, you know, the assistance of a developed economy, effectively. Also, the cybercrime legislation in Pakistan follows, for instance, in many, many ways, the Council of Europe's Convention on Cybercrime. That was a result of many engagements that we had had at the IGF, which resulted in the draft legislation being a model on which that legislation was based in our country. And recently, we had a multi-stakeholder session. This was incredible for me. I never thought that this would be possible. We actually had international governments groupings come down to Pakistan, conduct a 3-day workshop on cybersecurity. The first day was engaged with investigators and prosecutors. The second day was engaged basically with judges. And the third day was a roundtable with all in different segments to discuss what is it that developed economies and their governments can possibly do to help Pakistan put up a cert, for instance, put up a center of excellence. And this was not just done between governments engaging with local investigation agencies. There was civil society, to some extent, through lawyers at the table, and also businesses who spoke and actually gave their input as to what they could actually give add value with tools to fight cybercrime and cybersecurity and do forensics. So that gives you just an incredible example of how some of that engagement was caused and was initiated, in some respects, at the IGFs. I just wanted to end. Judges was also trained. And there's a project now for 6 months to basically, you know, interact with judges as well. We haven't had a regional and national IGF in our region. I think the Hyderabad meeting was going to be looked at as a regional IGF due to unfortunate circumstances, which we regret. We were unable to attend, and therefore that was an opportunity lost. But recently in Pakistan, the discussion to have it this year has started again. But just to give you a snapshot, all IT policy discussions that are taking place in my country right now are multi-stakeholder, and they are being engaged on a broad-based IT policy, which is multi-stakeholder. So, in effect, that process sort of looks like an IGF, but I wouldn't call it that. It's not officially sanctioned as one. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Zahid. I'm now going to hand over the microphone to Baher Esmet. He's the ICANN manager for regional relations for Middle East. He's going to be talking about IGF from a development perspective as well as ICANN's engagement with the IGF. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Alice. From ICANN's perspective, we've been participating actively in IGF and all the activities in relation to internet governance in many of the regions. And we think that the IGF is providing a very good platform for open discussions for knowledge and experience sharing in different parts of the world. So on the regional level, we have the network of regional managers at ICANN. Where we work closely with members of the internet community. One of the things I've noticed over the past 4 years that in some cases people and organizations, they may be working on issues related to internet governance, issues that are being discussed, under the theme of internet governance, while they're not realizing that this is an internet governance debate, and in actual fact, they don't even care about the terminology itself, that this is an internet governance issue. They work on things that impact them directly in their day-to-day business. So just a couple of examples. So in areas related to DNS operations, for instance, we've been working very closely with CCTLD managers. And as Alice mentioned, the topic of capacity building. So we've got a lot of requests for making capacity building programs for CCTLD managers. And in that respect, ICANN is not working actually by its own. It's still cooperating with other members of the community like AFRINIC and other RIRs like ISOC. So this week in Nairobi, there was a workshop on contingency planning for CCTLDs. And it was attended by, I guess, like 24 people from 13 different countries in Africa. And last month, we had more or less the same kind of workshop on contingency planning held in Amman, Jordan, for a number of Arab countries, and there are two other activities as well. So basically, this is the kind of thing that we're trying to do, is to work closely with organizations that do stuff sometimes regardless of any politics or any political debates around it. Same thing also goes with something like the MENOG, or the Middle East Network Operator Group, where again organizations like RIPE, NCC, and ISOC are sponsoring and participating actively in, and ICANN as well. So their ISPs and network operators in the Middle East, they get the chance to have hands-on training on things like IPv6, for instance, topics like DNS security. DNSSEC is a top topic on the agenda of MENOG in the past couple of meetings, and in the coming one, which will be in Saudi Arabia next month. So this is the kind of activities we've been doing at ICANN, and I think the key thing is that I think collaboration is the key thing, that we've been working very closely with members of different regions, as well as members of the internet community at large. So I think I'll stop there, and maybe we'll come later to other activities related to the IGF. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Baher, for that brief presentation. I'll hand over the mic to Mr. John Walubengu, who coordinates the Kenya IGF and is one of the co-coordinators as well of the East African IGF. John.
Sorry, Alice, I came late. Just brief me, what am I supposed to say? Am I supposed to talk about the process of Kenya IGF? Okay, thank you. Okay. The IGF, the regional IGF process in Kenya, well, in East Africa, has been run by Kictonet, which is a civil society organization. And what we usually do is we identify the themes or the issues that we feel are pertinent to the ICT community in Kenya. We thrash those issues online for about 2 or 3 weeks. And after that, we summarize those issues and have a face-to-face meeting in Kenya in order to sort of validate the various positions that were identified online. Now, as we're doing this, our neighbors in Uganda, Tanzania, Burundi, and Rwanda are also doing a similar process with a view of eventually meeting as a region. So last East African IGF was held in 2009, I think sometime in just before Sharm el-Sheikh, sometime in August, September. And all the national IGFs, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, would come and present their findings in that particular forum. One of the best experiences that I personally have seen for this type of, interactions is the fact that all the stakeholders, government, regulators, academia, when they come in this forum, they are on an equal footing, as opposed to the traditional setup where some stakeholders always feel they have a stronger vote. It's quite humbling, particularly from an African context, to see a whole government bureaucrat being exposed to, if you want, civil society noises without overreacting. And that to us has been the best experience, and it means that the government people or the government officers are getting more accountable to the people, to the user, and vice versa. That's what I can say for now. Thanks, Alice.
Thank you, Walu. To add on to that, I think one of the other questions was just looking at how the development issues, internet governance and development issues, and for us at the East African and Kenya level, issues of access are still very important. So even though we now have increased access to broadband, which we are hoping will translate to increased access to the internet, either through the mobile or or PCs and but access, we still feel that access is a very important issue, and then also linking that to our own development needs as well. John wants
Sorry,
to speak.
No, I've just been inspired now that you mentioned development. The issue of the undersea cable landing in East Africa was one of the issues that was thrashed out by these particular forums, and I'm pleased to note that by the time the cables were getting to Mombasa, the decision makers had developed deep understanding of the issues surrounding undersea cable, in particular things to do with open access. And we were very pleased when we observed that government, particularly the regulator, had already worked out the policy framework of how these undersea cables are going to be managed as they connect into the Kenyan territory. That said, we also noted that whereas the pricing, the cost of these internet services reduced greatly when the fiber landed, we noticed that that reduction is only at the wholesale level. The internet gateway providers have gotten sort of savings. They're accessing international internet at, probably 50% lower than satellite prices. But when you come down to the retail level, yes, prices have come down, but it still looks like the reduction in price may not be, it's still not affordable. I remember on the opening day, the CEO of ICANN was saying that now you can get a internet at $13, which is true, but maybe he forgot to say that it could be $13 for 300 MBs. So if you managed to download a big file, you find that your $13 can evaporate within no time. So at a retail level, I still want to believe that there's a lot of room to improve as far as pricing is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Walubengo. I just want to add that one of the new things during the 2009 East African IGF was the involvement of parliamentarians as a new stakeholder group, where we felt they were very important, especially at the decision-making level. The other ones, some of them that are going to be determining the future of the IGF in New York during the UN General Assembly. And so we felt it was very important to involve them at this stage, and not just the fact that they're going to be making decisions at the international level, but also at the national level in terms of moving forward or acknowledging the fact that multi-stakeholder processes, the impact is felt more at the national level, and that's where engagement of various stakeholders is very important. So with that, I'll hand over to Marcus Kuma, who's going to be telling us about the future of the IGF. And one of the questions I would like to ask him as well is whether he feels the issues, development issues, have been ably covered during the initial five-year mandate of the IGF, and if not, then how he sees that being played out if there's a new mandate. My other question would be, there are quite a number of initiatives around national and regional IGFs. With the new mandate, does he see a role, for a more concrete and meaningful role for both national and regional IGFs in terms of determining the influencing the program as well as in organization? So you're very welcome, Marcus. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. Good afternoon. It is a pleasure for me to be on this panel, and it's certainly a pleasure for me to be here in Nairobi. I had the privilege of attending the first two East Africa IGF. And I was very much impressed with what I saw. I think Valu explained very nicely how important this multi-stakeholder cooperation is, and all the speakers, I think, before emphasized on this aspect. And I was particularly impressed what I saw in Kenya. We had lunch yesterday with the permanent secretary, who confirmed it again. He said, yes, it's painful, but it helps us to make better decisions. And he, as a top civil servant, is willing to engage in these sometimes vivid, I'm sure, exchanges with civil society and with other stakeholders. This is really, truly remarkable. And I think you told me as well, Valu, that it's not the tradition of other ministries here in the country. It's very, very much politicians and bureaucrats take the decisions without necessarily consulting with bodies outside their ministry. So multi-stakeholder cooperation is, there seems to be an, is really the key, I think, to the IGF and to internet governance as a whole. This brings me to your question on the regional and national, and I think the previous panelists have all highlighted the importance of bringing down the debate to the regional and national level. Yes, there are global issues. Yes, there are transborder issues with the internet. Its very nature transcends borders. But nevertheless, much that affects the internet can be dealt with at the local level, at the national level, but also at the regional level. And if every country gets its act in order, then we have also solved the global issues. I think, again, to draw on something I learned from the UK, that I was told in the UK there is no UK-hosted child pornography anymore. So if every country does that, then you get rid of a global problem. So you don't need really a global solution, a negotiated global solution, which might not work in any case, but it's important to act locally. And now, we are in the beginning of this. When we started discussing the IGF agenda, we did not say there ought to be meetings at the national and regional level. They just sprung up, and they begin to mushroom. But they're also not like, shall we say, in the traditional diplomatic process where you have maybe regional preparatory meetings. They're much more than that. There are meetings, there are gatherings, there are to look at local problems, at national problems, at regional problems, that they're not here to discuss a global annual meeting. I think yourself made that point last year, I think, that the East Africa IGF is not here to prepare a global agenda. It's a meeting that has a value in itself. And even if the global IGF disappears, you would carry on with your regional IGF. And I think that sums it up nicely, that it has a value in itself. Now, how to interact better? We have not settled a format for the IGF once and for all at the beginning, and then we do that. We have improved from year to year. We have evolved. We have developed new formats. Last year, for the first time, because there were regional national IGFs, we had a panel where we brought them in. It was maybe not done in the best possible way. So we hope that this year we will create a more interactive session where we will have a discussion also among the various regional internet governance forums, that they tell us what is their priority, what is where do they see that solutions need to be found? Maybe where they find they cannot just do it in the region, where they need cooperation across the region. And we will also provide room, provide space, where the regional IGFs can hold an open forum, inform about their meetings, and we will also provide space if they want to discuss among themselves to compare notes. It might be a valid exercise also that each region lessons learned from each other. I mean, there can be purely organizational matters in terms of process, the preparatory process of the regional IGF, but it can also be an exchange of views of opinions or on substantive issues. So, yes, we improve, we hope, we evolve, and the Vilnius meeting, again, will build on previous meetings, but it will not be a repetition of the previous meetings. And that brings me to your second question. Have we done enough justice to development issues? And my clear answer would be no. We have said development should be a cross-cutting priority, but as it's so often the case with cross-cutting priorities, you then tend to neglect them. And instead of looking at every issue from a development angle, you tend to neglect it maybe a little bit too much. Development has maybe been more part of the discussions on access, but less so, I think, on other issues. So the Vilnius agenda will have a separate session on internet governance for development. It's called by its acronym so nicely, IG, and then 4D. But this is also clear that this is not ICT4D as such. We look there, and there is a difference. So we will basically try and look at the bigger development issues, such as Millennium Development Goals, and work it backwards towards internet governance and impact on social and economic inclusion and sustainability. Hopefully, this will bring the debate a little bit forward. Also, what aspects need to be thought of when you discuss internet governance to make it development friendly. In other policy areas, policymakers have developed a development agenda, be that intellectual property, be that trade. But in internet governance, we are not there yet. There is a need also for doing some conceptual work on that. Your last question, the future, whether or not this will be part of a new mandate, should the mandate be extended. You mentioned that both in relation to the national and regional IGFs and their relationship to the global IGF and also to development. My feeling is that if the mandate is extended, it will be extended as it is. It comes from a summit, heads of state and government decided that, so it's the highest political authority. I think it's very unlikely that the General Assembly would touch on this word. Whether or not the resolution will include other recommendations with regard to the future of the IGF, that is an open question. Remains to be seen. But in terms of mandate, the mandate is in the Tunis agenda, and I don't think diplomats love agreed language as a fallback position. So we agreed that before. We don't need to renegotiate. So my feeling is that it will be staying as it is, will remain as it is. Let me conclude by saying that those of you who feel that there is value in the IGF and that the mandate should be extended, please talk to your respective governments and make sure that they send the right instructions to their missions in New York. And I think this year's hosts of the ICANN meeting have already offered to host the 2011 meeting, and they deserve the support to carry on with this a project, and we have enjoyed their hospitality for the ICANN meeting, and I certainly would look forward to enjoying their hospitality for next year's IGF meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marcus. And yes, Kenya does support the extension of the IGF in principle, and as it is, and we'll be hosting the 2011. We are already assuming that it's been extended, or will be extended. And there's a lot of both political and other stakeholder support for the IGF and for IGF issues. I would like to thank all the panelists and to now open the floor for questions to them. I think I'll take four questions, have responses, and then next four. We've got about, I think, 30 minutes. Thank you. So, questions, please. Before I open the questions, idea.
I just want to add something which is very important for the regional and local IGF, which is the involvement of government representative and government entity. I think we have noticed at the global IGF level that we have very limited participation of government from developing country in general, and by bringing this process close to them in their country or in their region, allow them, one, make travel a little bit easy for them to attend the meeting, but at the same time, they can see by themselves how the community and the different stakeholders work together on those issues, and not that it is a controversial, they are controversial issue where they have to fight, but it is an open and smooth discussion environment where they can participate and where the other stakeholders also can listen to what they are saying. So I think it's very important to bring that down to local and regional level to increase the real multi-stakeholder approach on those matters.
Thank you, Adele. Leslie?
I always think there's a bit of a danger when you have a like-minded panel that we give the impression that everything is perfect, okay? So maybe let me be slightly controversial. There were 112 countries and 96 governments in Sharm, and I think it was the best ever attended IGF. And for me and for many others, it's the best example of a multi-stakeholder approach in action. That doesn't mean to say that we can all think it's perfect and that there aren't any opportunities for improvement. And there's no room for complacency. I am not assuming the mandate is renewed, perhaps. I'm not assuming it will continue to be as successful as it has been thus far. And I think a key question to throw out is, what would keep people engaged? How do we get other stakeholders involved, particularly the business community, for example, as well? Because we need to be very active to ensure that this model continues and is seen to be as successful as it has been thus far.
Thank you very much for that, Leslie. Open the floor for questions.
There's a question at the back.
Okay. Sorry, I don't have a microphone, but I want to follow up on what Adil was
saying. Just one second, because we have remote participation.
I want to follow up on what Adil was saying. And
sorry, I'll start over. At the East African IGF, the parliamentarian session was closed. And in my experience, for the last decade in working in internet governance, I know that internet governance likes sunshine, a lot of sunshine. So I would encourage those sessions to be duplicated in various other places and to be done again at the EA IGF, but open it up to everyone so that the parliamentarians can understand what all the stakeholders' concerns are.
Thank you. Any other? Martin. Yeah. get another mic, or maybe you can try and... the roam mic, please. The mic.
Hello? Yes. Without feedback this time. Thank you very much, Alice, for the floor. I think one of the interesting things for me that came out, and it was mentioned both for Pakistan and for Kenya, is the importance of essentially that embedding the process within your own culture and your own environment. Having been involved right from the start in those days as a government rep in the UK IGF, I can certainly understand that culture as being a way of helping you make better decisions because you understand the issues very much more clearly. UK IGF has tended to focus quite a bit on best practice and identifying best practice. Certainly I've been quite pleased to see other initiatives, like, for example, the Manthan project, where the South Asian countries have been identifying issues of specific interest within that region. And Marcus reminded me just before this meeting that the last UK IGF session, we had the UK Internet Exchange extolling the value, the work that had happened here in Kenya in establishing the Kenyan Internet Exchange. So here you've got a very good example of best practice that you can share very much more widely. So really my question to you from the East Africa IGF and from the Kenyan IGF is, have you actually put very much effort into identifying things where you are doing spectacularly well and things where perhaps you would like to try and understand the views and input from other people?
Thank you. I'll take two other questions and then let the panel respond.
We have a remote question, and this one is aimed directed specifically to Mr. Kumar. What is the position of the Secretariat vis-a-vis the ITU's role in governing the Internet?
Thank you. Aisha? Okay. Then I'll get the panelists to respond. And the first question, I think, was to the East African IGF or Lubengu on opening up the parliamentarian session. Sorry, you can also address the issue around linking ICTs, identifying things that work and that do not work in the East African IGF.
Okay. Maktim was asking that the next IGF session that included parliamentarians to be open. I think that's a valid suggestion. Maybe we would consider that so that at least the parliamentarians are able to interact with all stakeholders rather than a few selected ones. With regard to what we do well as East African IGF and whether we were able to share with the others, I think the best shareable thing within the East Africa context is the process itself. The fact that you have particularly government stakeholders participating in a particular forum on more or less an equal footing is something that is not
commonly seen around. And it enables even government officials to realize that they have much to gain by interacting with other stakeholders in a way that enables them to even pick intelligence about what other stakeholders are thinking or likely to do, not in a bad way, but in a way in which all parties' concerns can be addressed. That experience has been well replicated, particularly in Uganda. The Ugandan list actually has parliamentarians and government people participating almost to the level to which we are seeing on the Kenyan list. And in both cases, it's a totally novel idea within the African context. I will also probably add that a lot of government decision has, in the ICT sector particularly, has tended to be, in quotes, informed by some of the heated discussions that occur on those lists. So it means that the open, neutral platform that the multi-stakeholder model is providing is actually beneficial to all parties. And that, to me, is the things that the model can be shared across to other regions in Africa. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Walu. Before I get to the other question, I will let Adiel and Zahid first, and then Adiel.
Yeah, I just want to add on to the same question about opening government closed session to the public. I think it's the ideal situation, and I remember for the first West African IGF that we had last year, we had also a closed session for government representative, and I think it's also important for us to have a process that is not a revolutionary process. Government has a way of working. They feel very good by talking within themselves first. So we have to also take a progressive approach. I think the most important thing is to make them feel at their ease in the community. And if doing that and then reversing the outcome of the closed discussion, or then reassuring them that what is happening here will be very useful for them. As Walu just said, if you look at what is happening on some of the local mailing lists in East Africa where government participate to the discussion list, it's very encouraging to see, and something that we can replicate. But to reach that, it's because they feel that they can participate, and this is not a revolution against them. This is not something against what they are doing, but they are gaining a lot by discussing with the community, by having feedback from the community on policy that they are working on. But it is required process to really gain their confidence in the process. And I think by talking with them, even if in a closed door, if that's what they want, is necessary, but then the ultimate goal will be to ensure that we are not here to work against them, but we want them, in the contrary, we want to work with them to make the internet or the ICT development more efficient in the region. So, yeah.
Thank you very much, Adele. I think it links back to the question that Martin had asked in terms of the whole understanding the culture within which and the context within which you're operating. And for us in this region, parliamentarians, I think, loath to be embarrassed. And it's very important to first explain to them in very simple terms what internet governance means. Link that to livelihood issues and to perhaps present them in politically defensible arguments before you then introduce them to stakeholders. But then again, this is just for Kenya. I don't know about other regions. I'll have Zahid add on.
Thank you. Very quickly, to give you a practical example, the recent ICT policy discussions in Pakistan, we had a stage like that with the chairs up on at a higher level, and our secretary IT had actually visited the Paris ICANN meeting. He'd seen the multi-stakeholder setup and the format. And I think that many of us, myself, Fouad was there, many others were there, were able to make sure that nobody sat up on the stage. And for the first 15 minutes, all we did was rearrange the entire format of the room. And we actually came down to a roundtable session like this, just to give you a practical example of how that engagement took place. It was something incredible. And secondly, the first thing we said was, instead of creating silos and saying, right, you're in cybersecurity, you're in legislation, so wait. Let's do overarching issues first. What's the policy process? And that was just something we'd never heard before in a governance framework in our country. So I just wanted to add that. So there was a definite value, and it was classic ICANN, classic IGF. Thank you.
Thank you, Zaid. There's still one. Before I go, I allow Marcus to respond to the issue about the IGF and ITU. There was the word of caution from Leslie around how we engage, especially communities like the business community that is not very actively engaged, particularly from this region. So if anybody has a response, Aisha, thank you.
Thank you. Aisha Hassan from the International Chamber of Commerce and its BASIS initiative, Business Action to Support the Information Society. I'm very glad to see a number of people from our local hosts in the room, and I hope that giving a little bit of information to start to answer that question and then turn the question back, actually, to local business communities. First of all, by way of background, ICC's BASIS initiative is an umbrella for many businesses, companies, and associations from around the world to gather together, exchange information, receive a coordinating service from the ICC's secretariat, build input to the IGF preparations, but also receive information about the regional and national initiatives, support to be able to engage and contribute to the IGF at the global level, at the events themselves, and a whole host of other ways in which we try to help business people bring their expertise to these discussions, try to help them also maximize the informal elements that are so beneficial at the IGF. Zahid and others have touched on some of these informal benefits. Many of the companies and associations that work in our group have found that by being there, the informal networking, some of the side meetings that we set up with governments and many other stakeholders have reverberating effects for them afterwards on a range of internet governance issues. So we have a website. On the ICC website, you can find the BASIS link. You can get some of the information about our positions, for instance, the way in which the global business community fully supports the IGF's continuity with its multi-stakeholder founding principles intact, along with a range of other materials that we produce. In return, I would say I am available. I'm here until tomorrow with the rest of you. I'm happy to speak about it. We have many members in the room, Zahid, Marilyn, others, who are involved in BASIS and can help to facilitate your engagement. And I would welcome feedback to me and to all of us. What more can we do? Before I end, and I promise I will, I just want to point out that Doris is here from the Computer Society of Kenya. And we've worked very closely, Marilyn has, with Wado Sengaga and Doris, to help motivate some of the Kenyan business community. So that's just one way, but we try to do that around the ICANN and IGF events regularly. But please tell us what more we can do. Thank you.
Aisha.
Andrew Mack from AM Global in the U.S., Washington. I just wanted to add to what the points that Saeed and Leslie and Aisha have just made about trying to bring in both the private sector internationally and locally. When I was in Sharm, one of the things that was really extraordinary was the fact that this is a very unique gathering place, because you bring together people from the NGO sector who oftentimes have the broad idea, people from the private sector who oftentimes are very focused on how am I going to implement that, and the combination of them is very, very dynamic. What I found was missing in most of the sessions that I saw in Sharm was the local private sector perspective, because you are the guys, local Kenyan, local African private sector, are the people who are actually, at the end of all of these broad ideas about your Millennium Development Goals and everything, there are contracts that need to be let for things that need to be done. And so there's an opportunity in it for you. There's an opportunity to meet a lot of the international private sector people that you may want to know long term. And when government and NGO sectors see that interaction, it creates a very nice, positive dynamic, and some interesting things get done.
Thank you very much. Anybody else wants to respond to the question of private sector involvement? Okay, there's still one more question we haven't responded to. There was a question from a remote participant on ITU and IGF, so I'll let Marcus respond to that.
Before I respond to that, I would pick up on Leslie, and I agree totally with what she said. It's always a little bit dangerous when you're among like-minded. Here we all agree. It's very easy to agree among ourselves, but we have to bear in mind that not everybody is so enthusiastically in favor of multi-stakeholder cooperation, and not everybody is so enthusiastic about it like the top civil servant in Kenya, who is actually happy to be shouted at because he realizes that his policy at the end is better. There are people who don't like that. We should be aware of that. In terms of participation, I think the diversity we had at the Sharm meeting is by UN standard a good one. 95 governments represented participation from 116 countries. That is an excellent participation, especially considering the fact that in normal UN conferences, participants from developing countries get funded through regular budgets. So there you bring up participation numbers from countries correspondingly. And here, the people who came funded it themselves, which in many ways adds value to their participation. If I get my trip paid, you go, whether you are particularly interested or not. But if you have to pay and then you go, that shows you're really interested. And this is a commitment I think we value highly. The very concrete question, our relationship to the ITU, I can only say we have an excellent relationship. The ITU officially stated that the organization is in favor of a continuation of the mandate. And as a secretariat, we don't have opinions. We provide a neutral platform for policy dialogue.
Thank you very much, Marcus. We'll take another four questions.
Thank you, Alice. Pierre D'Angino. I just wanted to actually go back to the IGF for development, you know, component of this, and I would like Marcus eventually to elaborate more on that because I find it quite interesting. My second point is also about the regional workshop on IGF, and especially the success that we've been having from this place, you know, Kenya. That Kenya be, or at least the East Africa, be able to share this experience. There's one issue that I would like also them to be able to highlight, which is the communication. I mean, how you do communication between those different stakeholders, and how eventually all of this could filter into the work that the high-level sort of the governments and the ICT ministers have been doing, you know, in Africa Union, where they had a summit. The last summit was about those issues, but what we notice is that the way we communicate, we as professionals with the policymakers, is something we need to revisit. So I would like, you know, you guys to filter that one into your best practice so that you could share it with the other regions. Thanks.
Thank you. There's another? Okay.
This is another remote question. Would it be suitable to develop an Earth's ITG, Earth Oration, in quotes, based on the federal system where, one, global strategies and policies are developed by international stakeholders, i.e. the international organizations, ICANN, the IT community, and the like. At a second level, policies and strategies are adjusted at the national and regional level by stakeholders such as national governments, regional organizations, national ITGF, private sector, and the like. And three, ad hoc policies and strategies are identified for specific local sectors, meaning at the local community level.
We didn't understand the question very well, actually, so you may need to repeat it, please.
I will bring it over to you. I actually copied it out of the chat space.
Thank you. Let the panelists respond. And I think the first one was to the East African IGF and development. Marcus, do you want to respond to that?
Well, we are developing the theme. It's we're not there yet. I hope that at the meeting in Vilnius we will provide first answers as to what it means and what our answers should be. But the your input is welcome, all of your input. I mean, we always have a very open process where you can provide papers, we post it, we will have a discussion, but hopefully at Vilnius we will take something home out of this session that we know a little bit clearer what does it mean, internet governance for development. But basically, you know, what policies are development-friendly when it comes to policymaking in the internet governance field? What does it mean? I mean, so this needs some conceptual analysis, needs some conceptual work.
Thank you, Marcus. Walid, do you want to respond on the East African IGF?
I think Pierre's question was about how do we communicate between the stakeholders and how does that get filtered upwards to higher level meetings. Like I said, the key tool is the online list. KICTANET, which is Kenya ICT Action Network, has a list server that is fairly open. I say fairly because if you try to register more often than not, you'll get through. There were a few cases or instances of abuse where people registered for the sole purpose of abusing other stakeholders, and so we decided to tighten the registration process just so to ensure and validate that whoever is joining is really joining out of ICT interest. So the list is fairly open and anybody can actually register. And we use it to communicate extensively and make discussions. Our discussions, when we have an issue like if there's an upcoming IGF meeting, we will then have extremely structured discussions, maybe for 2 weeks. We identify the topics on what will be discussed so that the stakeholders know in advance the issues at hand and they can do background research before they submit their comments online. Once the discussions are done, we usually compile the report. There's a rapporteur who will put together the discussions in a format that could be digested by different stakeholders at individual or organizational level. These reports are uploaded on the various websites. I think the key one for East Africa is www.eigf, that is eastafricanigf.or.ke. So if you go to that website, you'll be able to get all the documents for the previous IGF meetings. As regards to upward sort of communication, I want to believe that the individuals on the KICTANET list are actually, they do have an 8-to-5 job in their different stations. Some could be CEOs of companies. Others are directors at the regulators. Others are lecturers in academia. Others are, as Marcus said, top civil bureaucrats. So when they are having formal meetings in their respective duty stations, it's really up to them to see how they can use the information they have gathered from those forums to make better and informed decisions about those ICT issues. I think that's how I see it. Thank you.
Thank you, Alu. And just to add on to that, Pierre, I think one of the issues that was very important to us when it came to ensuring that we were communicating for influence, if you may want to call it that way, was just making sure that we understood the interests of each stakeholder group. For example, our parliamentarians, as I think in most countries, not just in Kenya, would like to, you know, to deal with very concrete livelihood development-related issues that make sense to them and can be politically defensible, as I said. For private sector, they need to see where, you know, the profits are and what it is for them. And for us, it was mostly around creating a conducive environment from a legal and regulatory perspective. And so on for civil society and the rest. I think it's getting those needs and interests, understanding those needs and interests, and getting an animator or coordinator who understands how to place all that and use that to ensure that you're communicating for influence and engaging all the stakeholders in a way that they feel they are part of it. We're still not there with our bigger private sector. And we are still working with CSK and the others to engage them, but I think we'll get there. Leslie.
Just a quick addition on communication. I think it's important if you have multi-stakeholders that you recognise that they will be more or less comfortable with different ways of communicating too. And so that's why you need a range of ways by which people can engage and interact on issues. And for different people, for example, from this community, we tend to be very comfortable with mailing lists, for example. And parliamentarians from the UK anyway are much more comfortable with face-to-face engagement. And it's important that all stakeholders have a choice of ways to receive and make inputs to help that.
Thank you. Adil?
I just want to add on to what she just said. I think we need also to be ready to adapt. We have experienced the same thing about communicating with government. Usually when we send invitation to government, people electronically, as we do in this community, people understand email communication and take it as formal communication, formal invitation. But for government people, they want a letter signed and stamped by the organization. That's what allows them to get the approval for traveling, the approval to participate. So we have to adjust to that too. So when we are inviting government people to our event, we send them formal letter on letterhead, stamp, and sign. And that make them react more positively. So I think we need to look at that too.
Thank you very much. I'll let Zahid respond to the last question, the question that came through remote, and Baher as well. And then after that, I'll get each panelist to conclude.
I've been advised, and I think very wisely, to maybe repeat the question and my at least my understanding of it, which was that would you propose the federalization or earthization a model which would allow these policies of ICANN, et cetera, standards to be built at the IGF or at an international level, followed by adjustment of them locally or regionally, and, you know, et cetera. That's how the question goes. Well, that's my understanding. I think that this is where the best practices exchange that the IGF allows, which I think really is the takeaway, which I think really is a great value at the IGF, has a role to play. Not only is it a up or down, it's not just up to down or down to up, it's a mixture. Everybody comes here, pools their learning, and they cross-fertilize. And then when they go back to their different regions or nations, they can adjust them. They're not dictated to. There's no issue of sovereignty. There's no issue of, this is against my culture. This is against my society. And so it allows this very open, flexible exchange of ideas that is not available, that openness. And also, I must add, the accessibility of many actors, as I said earlier, business and civil society, into such an engagement does not exist in any other forum. And therefore, I think it's not a question of federalization. It's a question of basically generating a debate, exchanging these things, and people learning from it. So it's sort of like a learning effect, and then understanding each other's views, bringing those best practices down, adjust them if you necessarily have to. So I wouldn't necessarily characterize it as federalization. But yes, it's sort of a globalization of issues and learning from each other, definitely. Thank you. Sorry, can I just want to add another point? It also is very different from negotiating international standards because it allows the openness, and I think that is a key benefit and uniqueness of that of the IGF as a forum.
Okay. Thank you, Zahid. Bahir, please.
Quickly, I found part of the question actually in existence. I mean, taking this from ICANN's perspective and taking the global policies being developed on a global level by international stakeholders such as ICANN, as the question states, then taking regional aspects on regional level. So taking this or reflecting this on what's happening on the DNS space, for instance, where ICANN, through the bottom-up process, develops policy for top-level domains, then each registry has its own policy, then also on the CC level, each country code is entirely responsible for its policies on a national level. Same goes also for the numbers. So we have international groups like the RIRs and the NRO together with the ASO, they develop policies on a global level. Then also within the regions, we have the local registrars develop their policies with regard to numbers within the region. So part of the question is actually, I found it, you know, is already in existence and doesn't need any reinventing of, you know, any new systems. Thank you.
Thank you. We've only got about 4 minutes, run out of time, so I'll let the panelists present at this concluding remarks, 2 minutes each, and I'll start at this end, John Walubengo.
Thank you, Alice. I'll actually take 1 minute. I just want to say that the IGF process is multi-stakeholder, bottom-up, and that has been adopted at a regional level and allowed all the actors or the stakeholders to be able to benefit from a forum that is or appears, or it is indeed neutral to all actors, and that neutrality in itself enables most actors to be frank, open, because they know that whatever they are going to put on the table is not binding, and that sort of makes them relax and be more frank, less guarded. So that is very important, and we're happy that we've managed to adopt that, and we're practicing it locally here. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Adiel?
Well, I'll be very short. I think we need to continue to encourage the regionalization and localization of IGF. That will definitely allow local community to address issues that really is important for them, and we keep encourage the global participation to tackle more wide aspect of the internet development. Thank you.
Thank you, Adiel. Leslie, please.
Thank you, Alice. I can be brief too. It's not a time to be complacent, so I'm afraid there's more work needed. We need to work hard to ensure that the national, the regional models, and the IGF itself, of course, continue to develop and continue to evolve. They cannot stand still, but they need to continue to evolve as the successful models of open, inclusive, and diverse multi-stakeholderism in action. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Zahid?
Thank you. I'd just like to support everything that the previous speakers have said. I think it's very important that this forum, especially for developing countries and multi-stakeholders in developing countries, have access to this. I agree with Marcus to some extent, where even if this international thing doesn't continue, I think the value has become so well recognized regionally and nationally, it will have a momentum of its own. I know we, irrespective of the global one, will be doing something in Pakistan, and I know that will happen in the region. I just heard about the Asia IGF that is being planned. So, you know, just gives you an idea of the momentum, and, you know, the European IGF has been a success as well. I just wanted to add something else. I think ICANN has a very important role to play here, and I think something that it can tie in with its communications plan, we're talking about new GTLDs and expressions of interest. We're talking about the communications processes to begin. I think one of the global outreaches and communication things that ICANN actually can help with is to localize a lot. Webinars don't have to necessarily go into the countries. Ask the local stakeholders and the people, IT associations, etc., even bankers, if you will, and others. And this is a conversation I've had with some of the communication people in ICANN, saying, well, when you go down, explain what the internet does, explain how ICANN is important. Maybe as a part of it, the participation that will start will also have a byproduct, as a byproduct, an interest in the IGF, and generate that and energize that interest and bring those, you know, best practices to be exchanged even on the ground. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll let Maher respond.
Very briefly, for developing countries, I think we should continue to engage closely with the different stakeholders in there on different levels. I mean, and as my colleague said, we need to talk the right language to speak the right language to the right groups, governments, technical people, civil society, etc. And if they cannot go to the ICANN or IGF or other forums, we should try to bring those forums to them. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll let Marcus have his closing remarks.
Thank you. Well, I could not agree more with what the previous speakers said. I would very much emphasize Walu's analysis of the strengths and the value of the IGF as a neutral space for dialogue where nobody needs to be afraid that the wrong decisions is going to be taken. This is sometimes not well understood, especially in developing countries where governments are used to traditional UN processes where you negotiate. And it's quite often made as a criticism. There's no concrete outcome, but this is precisely the strength, that it creates a space where participants can talk freely. And this is a forum which, in that sense, helps policy development. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank all the panelists and all of you for participating. I think it's been a very productive discussion, as the IGF is always. I totally agree with everybody, especially Leslie, around not being complacent about it. And yes, we do have to to put in quite a lot of effort to ensure that the IGF is provided the second mandate, five-year mandate. And as I mentioned earlier, Kenya does support that fully, and we are looking forward to welcoming you in 2011. Also agree with all the speakers about the effect and the impact that the whole multi-stakeholder policy process has had, and you can see it very clearly at the national level, and Kenya is a very good example, and agree on the request that we need to share that. So thank you so much for all of you for your energy and for participating, and we do look forward to seeing you at the main IGF in 2011. Thank you again.